It's the time of the week when we go up to the busy newsroom of El País and talk to Simon Hunter. Good morning to you, Simon.
Good morning, Jazz. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you indeed. You know how we get those slow weeks in news?
Yes.
When nothing really happens and you think, I'm going to have to fill it in about a goat in Zaragoza or something.
Yes.
It's not one of those weeks, is it, Simon?
This is the antithesis of a slow week. Yeah, this is a crazy week. I mean, I spent most of the afternoon yesterday just trying to decide what we should do next and ended up not doing anything because I was so confused and distracted as to what to focus on. So where shall we start?
Well, let's start about something that your colleague, Reza Rincon, described as, and I quote, the most momentous case ever heard by the Supreme Court since the advent of democracy.
Yes, so this week saw, or yesterday saw, the start of the trial of the Catalan separatist leaders. There's 12 politicians and civil association leaders in the dock. They're being tried in the Supreme Court in Madrid. 9 of them have been held in pre-trial custody for a fairly long time. I mean, some of them have been behind bars since late 2017, which was obviously in the wake of the illegal independence referendum that was organized by the regional government, and then the subsequent declaration of independence. Now, I spoke to the BBC yesterday about this, and I've just read an editorial from the Independent, and the BBC, their opening question was, so what's happening this week? Is this the government? Is this the Spanish government saying, you can't do this sort of thing? And it's just this weird, the kind of pro-Catalan narrative has really kind of taken root outside of Spain, and people really sort of seem to ignore the fact that this is in the hands of the courts. I mean, this is the courts that are dealing with this case. Is the sort of underlying suggestion by that kind of approach to this whole issue is that the courts in Spain, that there's no separation of powers, and the courts in Spain are somehow in the pocket of the government. I mean, it's worth pointing out, of course, that when the real, you know, the major crisis was going on, we had a Popular Party government. Now we've got a completely different government. We've got a Socialist Party government. And the approach of the Socialist Party has been different from that of the Popular Party. You know, under the Popular Party, we had the Prime Minister Rajoy, who's very much a sort of wait-and-see politician, you know, kind of get involved in any sort of talks, make any concessions to Catalonia. And Pedro Sanchez, of course, he came in on the back of this no confidence motion, and he said right from day one that he was going to do politics to solve a political problem. You know, of course, he needs the support of the pro-Catalan independence parties in Congress because he's in a minority. He hasn't got many seats in Congress at the moment. But he did come in with an attitude of, you know, we're going to do politics. So I think, you know, we've got to separate. If we trust the fact that there is a separation of powers in Spain, and, you know, we haven't got any reason not to, then, you know, we have to sort of separate what is the government's approach to the Catalan issue and what is the court's approach to the Catalan issue. And I always point this out that, you know, we're all glued to the news, glued to the TVs in the newsroom when the Declaration of Independence was passed in the regional government in 2017. And just before it was passed, the in-house council in the Catalan regional parliament stood up and said, I have to warn you all that you are potentially about to incur in a criminal offence. And these are the consequences. I mean, people also make a big fuss about the fact that the 9 politicians and civil association leaders have been in pre-trial custody since late 2017. But of course, 5 of their colleagues fled Spain, including the former regional premier, Carles Puigdemont. They fled Spain to avoid arrest. You know, Puigdemont, Spain has been trying to extradite Puigdemont. That hasn't happened. But that's not to say that he's not still, you know, he shouldn't answer to these charges. And of course, they are very serious charges that the defendants are facing. They include rebellion and sedition. Rebellion is the controversial one because that suggests some sort of uprising against the state involving violence, and that's a very hot topic. That's going to be a real hot topic in the upcoming court case because, of course, the defense lawyers say that, you know, the politicians are peaceful people and that there was no suggestion of violence. the problem with that argument is what happened outside the regional finance department in Catalonia. That was when there was this massive demonstration outside while the police were and the civil guard were raiding the building looking for materials associated with the upcoming referendum. And there was, of course, this famous damage done to these three civil guard patrol cars, which were completely destroyed. The people inside the building couldn't leave the building. That's kind of really the sort of, you know, one of the key elements for those charges. So this is going to play out over the next probably likely 3 months, it looks like. And yeah, it's going to be pretty intense over the next 3 months. And of course, you know, the pro-Catalan narrative is that, you know, this is that these are political prisoners. This is a politically motivated trial. Guilty sentences are guaranteed. If there are guilty sentences passed against these politicians, they're facing, you know, potentially decades in jail, then it could have a very sort of serious effect on the pro-independence movement, on Spain in general. We can expect fireworks depending on the outcome. Of course, there is the possibility, we shouldn't forget, you know, the government does have it within its powers to dole out pardons to people who've been convicted of offences. I mean, anything from, you know, a drunk driving offence to something like this. So that's a possibility. Maybe these politicians might be found guilty, but then whoever's in government at the time, because there's no guarantee it will still be the socialists by the time we get a verdict, could say, okay, well, we're going to pardon these defendants, and that could be the sort of, you know, that could be the most that could be the outcome that has a kind of the least explosive effect perhaps. So we will be keeping an eye on the developments in the trial as it is. First, you know, we're only on the second day. Yesterday we saw some sort of opening arguments from the defense, which are normally sort of used to address quite sort of technical legal issues, but actually yesterday you know, the kind of the political arguments started kind of right off from the bat. And, you know, defense lawyers for the former deputy premier of the region, Oriol Junqueras, of the Catalan Republican left, basically saying that this was, you know, this was a political trial. This is a trial against that everything in this whole case violates the constitutional rights of the defendants, you know, their constitutional rights to protest, their constitutional rights to vote, and a whole series of arguments. So today we're hearing more from the prosecution in the case. There's a number of different prosecutions. You've got the public prosecutor, which the central government has tried very hard, the Prime Minister Sanchez has tried very hard not to put any pressure or influence on the public prosecutor to avoid further kind of criticism from the pro-Catalan party. So he's just let the public prosecutor choose the charges that they're levelling against the defendants. The Solicitor General is another whole other case. The Solicitor General is directly dependent of the government, and there the government has kind of tried to intervene to sort of soften the charges a little bit, leave out rebellion, if I remember rightly, but still include things like sedition and misuse of funds. And then you've got the far right party Vox is actually a private prosecution in the case, and they're calling for 80 year prison sentences for the defendants. They're obviously, as we've discussed in previous weeks, they've got some very sort of radical views.
Being Vox, you're lucky they're not asking for, you know, hung, drawn, and quartering, to be honest with you.
Exactly. That would be too good for them, Giles. They're taking a very harsh stance, because basically Vox, one of the things that Vox wants is a complete re-centralisation of powers and a kind of end to the regional autonomous powers that regions like Catalonia have at the moment. So it's all very, very complicated, and it links very, very nicely with what we're going to speak about next.
Absolutely. Right, off you go then.
I'm like the Duracell bunny at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
I tell you exactly what's going on in Spain. So we are in the second day of the budget debate in Congress. It's going on at the moment. As I mentioned, Prime Minister Sanchez is in a very weak position. He's got 84 seats in a 350-seat chamber. You need 176 seats votes for a majority. So up until now, I mean, he won his motion of no confidence thanks to support from other parties, including left-wing Podemos, but of course also including the pro-Catalan parties such as the Catalan Republican Left and PDeCAT, which is another one of these pro-independence parties. So they have been looking for concessions from Sanchez when it comes to the Catalan issue. What they really want is to hold a referendum, which that is a red line for the Spanish government. They said, no way, you're not holding a referendum. Then last week, we had this strange controversy related to the figure of a rapporteur. These cross-party talks were planned between the central government and Catalan parties. And one of the demands of Catalan parties is that there be an international rapporteur, an international mediator at these meetings, which is anathema for the Spanish opposition because they say, well, you know, that's ridiculous. That puts a regional government of Spain on the same level as the national government, and it's absurd to say that we need to have an international mediator there. So what they did come up with was a compromise whereby there would be this figure of a rapporteur. It wasn't really defined as to exactly what they would be doing there. It was more so it's kind of like a mediator, but someone who would be taking notes as well, someone just to sort of facilitate the meeting. When this emerged, it caused a huge stink, and that was really that was the detonator for the big march that we saw on Sunday in Madrid, which was called by the Popular Party, Citizens, and Vox. And there they are again. Vox are kind of muscling in on the mainstream of Spanish politics. And the way that, you know, we used to have a two-party system in Spain, but it's completely fragmented now. And if we do end up with elections this year, a general election, we might end up seeing a rerun of what we just saw in Andalusia, whereby the PP, Citizens, and Vox end up having the votes to form a right-wing government. So it looks like today Pedro Sanchez is almost definitely going to lose, but, you know, barring any last-minute surprise, and it would be a huge surprise, it looks like he is going to lose his vote on the 2019 budget plan, which would be a kind of a kick in the teeth for Catalonia, really, because he's promised more spending for the region in those budget plans, and that is, of course, one of the long-standing demands of the Catalan secessionists, is that they feel that they pay in more to the system than they get back. So if that happens, I don't think he's got any choice but to call a general election. We could be looking at it in the spring. It could happen on this kind of Super Sunday on May the 26th, which is when Spain is already going to be going to the polls in regional, municipal, and European elections. So for the voters, it would literally be like, right, get it all out of the way in one day. And actually, for the journalists too. I'm not sure we would. I don't think we wouldn't be too bothered about that, actually, because we could, you know, just one Sunday that we have to work late into the night instead of several. So that's the kind of outlook at the moment. But it's extraordinary how all these events are kind of all coming together at the same time. That, you know, just when the trial is kicking off, we've got this massive political instability. You know, there are some voices who argue that the pro-Catalan independence parties would actually like to have a right-wing government in power in the central government, because they call it a factory for pro-independence supporters. So people are more likely to get behind the cause in Catalonia if there's a right-wing government that's being very aggressive, because let's not forget, you know, the people, as I mentioned earlier, you know, the PP just didn't give any ground at all when it came to Catalonia. Citizens, Ciudadanos, was actually born out of a regional party which opposed Catalan independence, and Vox is completely opposed to Catalan independence, Basque independence, and is, you know, fighting for the unity of Spain with a very centralized system of government. So to sum up, a big mess.
Right,
and
then.
Let's see how it plays out this week.
Just quickly, going back to that over the weekend, I've heard varying reports on the numbers here. Some said 40,000, some said 50,000, some have said 200,000, and there were some saying, Vox, I think, was saying 1 million people marched.
Yeah, well, this always happens. I mean, you know, any kind of demonstration in Spain, it always ends up with this kind of ridiculous. And they should put turnstiles in and actually literally count the people, because this always happens. I mean, the central government delegate in Madrid, obviously appointed by the Socialist Party, put the figure at 45,000.
Right.
The organisers said 200,000. So I think we can assume that the number was somewhere in between those two figures. But I think the, you know, basically the Popular Party put on fleets of buses, you know, from all over Spain, and said anyone that wants to come, they can come. There's a very funny story. Apparently, football supporters from Cádiz took advantage of the buses and got on the buses so that they could come to a football game that Cádiz was playing in Madrid.
Oh, brilliant!
and then left after the you know, at the end of the day, on the same buses. So there is kind of really the sort of the general view was that it was a bit of a damp squib, really. It didn't attract, you know, as many people as they were hoping for. You know, the idea was it was a demonstration to say throw Sanchez out, you know, get him out of power. There was the usual sort of you know, the pre-constitutional flags on show and some fairly dodgy vox pops going on about people, you know, with sentences that begin with "I'm not racist, but," you know, insert hugely racist.
It seemed to be that every PP mayor in Spain got a free day out in Madrid to do a bit of shopping and go and wave a Spanish flag for a bit, allegedly.
Yeah, exactly. And then you had, for the first time, you had the leaders of the PP and Citizens and Vox posing for a photo together. The leader of Citizens had been trying to avoid appearing with Vox because they want to avoid being seen as you know, too far to the right. So that was pretty important. There was also a funny, I don't know if you know this, Giles, but Manuel Valls, the French politician, is running for office in I think he's running for the mayor of Barcelona, or anyway, he's running for office in Catalonia, and he was doing an interview on French TV in French, and there's this woman in the corner of the screen, and you could just hear her saying, "What's he say? Is he talking in Catalan?" Completely unaware that he was talking in French. So yeah, so it's pretty funny anecdotes, but it's still, you know, it's a bit like when we see those demonstrations of fairly ordinary looking middle class Spaniards in the, you know, in the Valley of the Fallen doing fascist salutes, and it does make you think, oh my goodness, what's happening here? I always say this, but you know, for all this, you know, this rise of populism that we've seen around the world in recent years, we've been able to quite smugly say that, oh no, we don't have anything like that in Spain. And now with the emergence of Vox and you know, with the PP and Citizens moving further to the right, it is a bit concerning.
I'm quite looking forward to a return to the 50s. My wardrobe might come back in fashion. Now then, just quickly, finally, Simon, because you have gone like the Duracell battery on whatever, but just quickly, yes, run us through the final story, because I've got another guest lined up after this, believe it or not.
Yeah, no worries. So this is a bit worrying as well. This is another one of those things that you kind of see in other countries, but I can't remember having seen this before in Spain. Madrid's got this massive cemetery called La Almudena. Basically some of the key figures, historical figures from the left wing, their graves have been desecrated. So you may have heard of the Republican heroine of the Spanish Civil War, La Pasionaria.
Absolutely.
Her grave got paint thrown over it. And then Pablo Iglesias, not Pablo Iglesias from Podemos, but the founder of the Spanish Socialist Party, that's who Pablo Iglesias from Podemos was named after. His grave has also had paint thrown on it. And a plaque to the 13 Rosas, the 13 women that were executed during the Civil War, that you've probably heard of as well from numerous films.
Yeah.
So that's a bit worrying as well. What's going on there? Some more crispation going on.
Not so much worrying as you'd have to say disgusting on that one, really. I mean,
yeah,
it's, you know,
absolutely.
Especially like the 13 Roses, because that's just one of the most tragic tales to come out of the Civil War. Simon, I could talk to you, as we know, most of the day, but I'm going to cut you short, Simon. If people want to find out and keep abreast of the extremely exciting, well, interesting news, because if you want to get a grip on what's happening in Spain, El País is the place to go.
Yep, absolutely. And check out our podcast as well, where we'll be talking about all these issues.
And the podcast is, of course, famously called Care.
Care?
Exactly.
You have to say it like that.
And I look forward to speaking to you with the same accent probably next week after we got through this weekend. Simon, fantastic, at El País, have a great rest of your week, mate.
And you. Thanks, Charles.
Take care.